This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
The media, Democrats do hate America. We'll talk about that tonight. John Cornyn is being challenged with a legitimate primary challenger. He joins us tonight on the show. The Florida Attorney General is here as well. Apparently it's legal night here on I'm Right. Okay. Before we get to Democrats and how they hate America, mainly CNN, but it's way more than CNN. Before we get to any of that, I want to do something really quickly here. Avon P. Drake Jr. You've probably never heard the name, but he was 106 years old. He was our oldest living survivor of Pearl Harbor, and he finally passed away. And wanted to take a moment to honor the man. And I wanted to take a moment, somber as it can be, wanted to take a moment and just encourage you, if you have anybody in your life, in any, touching your sphere at all, who is a World War II veteran, buy him a cup of coffee. Maybe, here's a suggestion, just a suggestion, just do what you want. Do you have a nursing home of some kind, a care facility, an old people's home, whatever you want to call it, in your area? Maybe a phone call. See if there's one there. Go have coffee with them on Saturday, on Sunday. I say this not just because they will love it, and not just because you will love it. You will love it, by the way. I say this because Father Time is undefeated. And these World War II veterans were finally at that place now in the year 2025. They're all going away. They're all dying. We don't have many more years where we'll be able to talk to them. And they are such a link to the past, a link to past generations. And I wanted to encourage you to go talk to them. Hear their stories. You will enjoy yourself. You will. So if you feel like it, go talk to one. Pearl Harbor was a dark day in this country. There were a lot of brave men who fought in that. A lot of brave men died. And then, of course, World War II, we know what happened there. So if you know one, talk to them, all right? All right. Now, speaking of the country, let's shift gears on something here. Because it's getting a lot of play about CNN versus Donald Trump and Trump versus the judges and deportations and things like that. Okay, so let's just boil this down. The White House announced they're eyeing 1 million deportations the first year. Now, there are a couple things we need to say about this number. One, that's very ambitious and good for the White House. Two, that's not nearly enough. I know it sounds like I'm saying two different things. I'm really, really not. I applaud the Trump administration and the Trump White House for their ongoing efforts to round up as many illegal immigrants as humanly possible. They are trying. I have many sources inside of the White House. They are dead set on getting them all out if they can. 1 million the first year, that's a good goal. Is that going to be enough at the end of 4 years? Well, no. Not when Joe Biden and the communists imported 20 million in their 4 years. 4 million after 4 years is not enough, but it's a good start, a good first year, which of course brings us to our current situation. Because I get a lot of questions, a lot of emailed questions from people asking me, Jesse, I don't understand why. Why is this judge making this ruling? Why are they stopping this? Why are Democrats so adamant about this? Well, let me put this as plainly as humanly possible. We have, for generations now, taught Americans' children in schools and most definitely in college that the United States of America is evil. If you end up leaving school or believing that, you will naturally find a home in the Democrat Party, because the Democrat Party of 2025 despises the United States of America. There's no other reason you would get elected and promptly bring in as many rapists and murderers from El Salvador as humanly possible. The Democrat Party hates the United States of America. And this is something anyone who's ever worked on political campaigns will tell you, and Democrats will whine about this, and yet it is a 100% verifiable fact. If there is a home with an American flag, that is not a Democrat home. It's not. There are exceptions, of course, but anyone who's ever knocked on doors, worked on a campaign at all, will tell you that home may not be a Republican home. It may be Republican, it may be Libertarian, it may be Independent, it may be this or that. But if there's an American flag flying on that home, it is not a Democrat home. Because the entire base of the modern Democrat Party believes America sucks. And this country deserves to be burnt down. And yeah, if we brought in 20 million barbarians, that's because the barbarians, they deserve to loot this country, which sucks anyway. That's how the American media thinks. That's how the American Democrat Party thinks. That's how all those federal employees, top to bottom, that's exactly how they think about this country. That little mist you get in your eyes when the national anthem is playing, it is as foreign to these people as Narnia. They don't have any idea what that kind of patriotism, what that kind of love of America feels like. All they feel is hatred for this place, which sucks. And so getting to that place where you accept that can be hard for a lot of people. I'm a jerk, so it's easy for me. But for a lot of people, it's hard to accept that you share a country with people who hate the country. There's no other explanation for what you see, though. I mean, let's talk specifically about the MS-13 gang member. MS-13, really bad news. Originated in El Salvador, you probably already know this, but they made their bones in the criminal world by being more vicious than other gangs. That's how they rose. They came here, they've been here for years, and every now and then you'll see it. Of course, the media covers it up, but you'll see it. You pick up your phone one day and you'll see some story about, oh, well, some kid got tortured to death. Oh, somebody got their head chopped off. This is in America. MS-13 did it. MS-13 did it. MS-13 is a vicious organization. The Trump administration took somebody who wasn't an American citizen, but was, according to two different courts, a member of MS-13, and they packed him up and they sent him back home to El Salvador. He's not an American. He belongs in El Salvador. They sent him back home. And since that time, almost every single elected Democrat and everybody in the American media have tried desperately to bring the MS-13 gang member back into the United States of America. Now, tell me again, am I crazy for saying these people hate America? And this Caitlin Collins with CNN, she gets into the White House, into the Oval Office, where El Salvador's President Bukele and President Trump are there. And what's she there to do? She needs that rapist back in America.
Let's hear the question from this very low-rated anchor at CBS.
Thank you, President. Do you plan to ask President Bukele to help return the man who your administration says was mistakenly deported? The man who was mistakenly deported to El Salvador?
Well, let me ask Pam, would you answer that question?
Two courts, an immigration court and an appellate immigration court, ruled that he was a member of MS-13.
Can President Bukele weigh in on this? Do you plan to return him?
Well, I'm supposed to be not suggesting that I smuggle a terrorist into the United States, right?
It's always
how can I return him to the United States? Like, I smuggle him into the United States, or what do I do? Of course, I'm not going to do it. It's like, the question is preposterous. How can I smuggle a terrorist into the United States? I don't have the power to return him to the United States.
But you could release him inside El Salvador.
Yeah, but I'm not releasing, we're not very fond of releasing terrorists into our country. I mean, you want us to go back into the releasing criminals so we can go back to being the murder capital of the world? No, that's not going to happen.
They'd love to have a criminal, released into
our country. There's a fascination.
They would love it. These are sick people.
Mr. President, you said that if the Supreme Court said someone needed to be returned, that you would abide by that. You said that on Air Force One just a few days ago. And
how
they said
that
it must be facilitated.
Why don't you just say, isn't it wonderful that we're keeping criminals out of our country? Why can't you just say that? Why do you go over and over? And that's why nobody watches you anymore. You have no credibility. I think they hate our country, actually.
And of course, they do. There's no other explanation for it. These people, if they had their way, would bring in every rapist and murderer and drug dealer across the planet into your community, because that's how you burn down a country. And that's how they've been trained over and over again. And Dana Bash can go to the television set and try to claim they don't hate America all day long.
Say, for the record, since we heard President Trump say in the Oval Office that CNN hates our country, CNN does not hate our country. That should go without saying. I've been here for 32 years, and I...
But you do. You do hate the country. Now, you don't want to be labeled as that, because that label does hurt CNN's credibility. You don't want that word to go out that you hate the country. But I own a home. I own a home. And if I fly down to El Salvador and I walk into that prison for terrorists that Bukele has set up, and I ask them, I said, hey, I need five criminals from here. Make it the worst of the worst. And they hand those criminals to me. And I put those criminals on a plane. And I fly them back to the United States of America. And I move them into the extra bedroom in my home. Do I love my home or do I hate my home? Democrats brought 20 million people into the United States of America on purpose. They didn't allow it. They didn't look the other way. They not only opened the border, they sued to keep the border open, and then they took your money and they flew these people in the country, and then took more of your money and flew these people around the country, and then they took more of your money and they created an app to allow these people to schedule their invasion into this country. So allow me to say what I've said many times before, and I'll continue to repeat it. Democrats do hate the United States of America. They want to burn it down. Voting for Democrats in the year 2025 is an act of evil, and you should never do it. And if you've done it recently, you should be ashamed of yourself. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Now, state of Florida has been a model for the direction we want the United States of America to go. Their attorney general has been a model of how we want our attorney generals to act, all of them. And I know it's attorneys general. That's a stupid way to say the plural version of the word, so I don't say it that way. I call them attorney generals. Anyway, we're going to talk to Florida's state attorney general in a moment before we talk to him. Let's do remember that corporations, big ones, they took part in the intentional destruction of this country. And sadly, just like the Biden administration did with your money, the corporations that took part in the cultural destruction of America did so with your money and my money. Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile. Have you looked up these companies? Have you seen where they give back? It's really gross. And I'll tell you, if you look into it, I'm warning you now, you'll feel the guilt I felt when I looked into it. I looked into it and I thought to myself, gosh, I funded all that. That's bad. Switch to Pure Talk. Pure Talk is the wonderful, patriotic cell phone company. Their CEO is a veteran. Walked the jungles of Vietnam, two tours for this country. Switch to Pure Talk. You'll save money. They're on the same network and you'll feel a lot better about paying your cell phone bill. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Well, I have outstanding news. I mean, it's not breaking news. We've already talked about it on the show. But what have we said over and over and over again? That it's red states that constantly fail the United States of America. And part of our failure is the loser senators we send to Washington, D.C., red states, states like my own, like Texas, but Texas isn't alone, the Carolinas, the Dakotas, I could go down the list. Red states routinely send the biggest weenie losers to Washington, D.C. we can find. We could have anybody we want. And so we need to change that. And the only way to change that is a primary. But it's hard to primary a United States senator. It's very difficult. Takes money. You have to have the ability to raise money. You have to be already known. You can't, as much as I hate this, you can't come out of nowhere and challenge a United States senator. You need the right circumstances, and we have it. Gosh, I'm so happy right now. Joining me now, the current attorney general for the state of Texas, and a good one, and a man who is doing exactly what we've talked about forever, Attorney General Ken Paxton, who is challenging John Cornyn in Texas. I'm so happy you're here. I don't think I've ever said that to anybody, but I'm just so thrilled you're here.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here. It's going to be an interesting year.
Yeah. Why do this?
You know, it's interesting. I'm getting all this pushback from the Washington establishment about why I shouldn't do it, because there's really no difference. Cornyn is just as good as anybody else. And I'm, my answer is no, he's not. If you look at his 23 years in the Senate, look at his 40 years in office, there's nothing that you look at and you say, hey, this guy really represents Texans, especially Texas primary voters, the way we want to be represented. And so after 23 years, I can say it's been a failure. I can't point to things that he's done that I'm proud of. I can talk about things that he has done that I wished he hadn't done. And so there's no reason. Maybe if he's from Maine, we're okay with this. But if we're from Texas, we need somebody more like Ted Cruz, not somebody like John Cornyn, who just goes along to get along and answers to Washington and not the Texas voters.
No, you're 100% right about that. It's something that I've implored my fellow Texans and all red staters about, that we owe the country better than what we give them. Like you pointed out, Maine, Alaska. Okay, that's going to be what it's going to be. Texas should be sending the most blood red conservative you could possibly find. And John Cornyn's there leading the charge on gun control?
Well, exactly. And I can tell you this. I mean, no Democratic president, including Joe Biden, is going to be congratulating me on work that I've done for the country. And that's exactly what happened with John Cornyn when he pushed through his gun legislation that restricted ownership and restricted gun rights. This is a guy that was congratulated by Joe Biden. That tells you exactly what you need to know. That's never going to happen with me.
What happens to these people when they go to D.C.? Because obviously, you know, when you're a senator from a state like Texas, we'll just make it about Texas, you understand who the people of Texas are and what they want. Why do you lose your mind in Washington, D.C.? Is it the power? Is it the money? What is it?
I think it does happen that people change, but I don't think that's John Cornyn's story. I think when he got elected during the Bush reign, he was exactly what he wanted. We were just trying to elect Republicans. We hadn't had very many Republicans in Texas. We elected John Cornyn. He was a Bush guy, and he was there to do what the Bushes wanted him to do. He still is. And the reality is now we are a solid Republican state, and we don't have to accept that we're just going to have a guy that go up there and has the R by his name. He's going to vote, you know, somewhat Republican, but he's not going to get the job done. And he's going to do things like oppose the border wall. He is going to oppose Donald Trump, both personally as an elected official, but also on many of his issues. And he is going to pass restrictive gun legislation. And that's not what we need from Texas.
How's the GOP response been, both inside the state and nationally? I say this as someone who has challenged an establishment guy for Congress and felt what that's like with all the big money people, all the big shots telling you, you have to wait your turn, you can't do this. I remember all the lines. I'm sure you've gotten all of them.
I've gotten them all, and mostly from outside of Texas, mostly from, you know, Senate leadership and other, you know, establishment people, some within Texas that were definitely part of that establishment group. But the majority of Texans that I've talked to are very excited. I mean, I didn't just like come up with this idea. I've been out testing. I've been out talking. I've been out meeting with hundreds of Republicans. And every time I brought it up, it was an overwhelmingly positive response. We are desperate for a change. We are desperate after 24 years of John Cornyn to have a choice. And so that's what this is. This is a choice. And I can guarantee this. John Cornyn is not going to run on his record. He's not going to, because he can't. He's not going to run on my record. This is all going to be personal attacks. And that's what he's all about. He cannot stand on his own two feet. And the only thing he can say is, you know, now I'm supporting Trump after criticizing him for the last, you know, 8 years. Now, Johnny come lately, John Cornyn is in the fold for the president for the first time ever. And that's going to last how long? It's going to last until we're done with the elections.
Well, of course. He was asked about you. Here's what he said. I'm sure you've seen it.
Do you have any level of concern about Paxton running to the right of you in this primary?
Well, the biggest potential loser is President Trump's agenda. I've been a supporter of the president during his first term of office, and that's continued during his current term. Mr. Paxton has a checkered background. He is a con man and a fraud. And I think the people of Texas know that.
It's also predictable and tired. You already pointed out what it's going to be. It's going to be a never-ending commercial spree of Trump, Trump, Trump. I love Trump. I love Trump. Even though he's done everything in his power to undermine everything the Make America Great Again agenda is, it's going to be Donald Trump's name as he desperately sucks up trying to earn that endorsement.
Well, he just talked about fraud and a con man. That's exactly what we just saw there, talking about, I've been a big supporter of Donald Trump from the beginning. That is a con job, and that is a fraudulent statement. That is not true. He said in 2016, when Trump was our nominee, that he was an albatross around our neck, and this time he insinuated that he was a criminal. Of course, John was a judge, and he should know better than to insinuate that people are criminals without proof, which is what he did in my case and in the president's case. And then, of course, he said that he would not be supporting Donald Trump and that we should have a better new nominee. So just looking at what he said in that clip, that's what you call a fraudulent statement. That's what you call a con man. And that's supposedly what I am. And there he is, lying to the public and lying to Texans.
All right, where do we go from here? Give the people watching details, because this is a national race that has national implications. Taking out one of these losers is really important for the whole country. So the people watching, what can they do? Can they do anything? When is all this?
Oh, look, this is going to be a battle of Texas versus Washington establishment. And the money is going to come from all over the country for John Cornyn. He'll have plenty of money from outside sources. He will raise some money in Texas, but my money is going to have to come from the grassroots all over the country. And I am convinced that we can raise enough. We don't have to outraise them. We just have to be in the game of something 2-1, 3-1. Within that range, we can beat John Cornyn and we can win this election.
Where do people go?
KenPaxton.com. And you can go donate right there and start the momentum. Small contributions are we want them, because it shows support. It shows the difference between me and him, because he will not be getting those small contributions, not in any large volume.
KenPaxton.com. If you got $5, give it. If you got $500, give it. This is critically important. I'm asking you to do it. How many times do I do that? I never do that. I'm doing it right now. Mr. Attorney General, thank you. I appreciate you. I'm very much behind you. Go get them. We need you to win. All right. Now, we have to talk. Well, remember Ryan Routh? Let's have a talk here in a moment. Before we talk about that, I need to tell you something. I have to confess something to you. I'm in a terrible mood today. Maybe you can already tell. Maybe you could tell from the opening of the show. I'm just in a dreadful mood. You know why? Because I failed. Went to bed last night. I did not have my cup of hot chocolate with dream powder in it. I did not. I told myself that I didn't feel like going to the kitchen. I was already in bed. I was comfortable. I was warm. I have every excuse in the world. And you know what I did? I laid there and tossed and turned for 2-3 hours. And then even still, I told myself I should get up and make myself a cup of dream powder. And I didn't do it. And now I'm angry and nasty all day. It's the lack of dream powder in my life. Do you want to sleep like a baby? Naturally, it's got natural things in it. Go try it. Just try one bag. You'll have it in your house for the rest of your life. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back. All right. So there are a couple things. There's a kind of a good news, bad news situation here. The bad news is the last administration did some things, a lot of bad things, a lot of evil things. Some things are positively frightening, and in fact, we'll get to one of those things in a moment. The good news is there are some really great red state AGs out there now. A bench, if you will, an inspiring group of people who actually have guts to fight back against things. And of course, surprise, surprise, Florida happens to be leading the charge on this like they've been doing for years. Joining me now, James Uthmeyer, AG, Attorney General of the wonderful state of Florida. Okay, James, Ryan Routh was one hole ahead of Donald Trump with a weapon, an optic, body armor, which he wasn't wearing, which is kind of weird, getting ready to murder the soon-to-be president of the United States of America. What concerns me a great deal before we get to your portion of it is the Biden administration stonewalled you on it?
They did, yes. I mean, our governor issued an executive order right away directing our law enforcement to proceed with our own state investigation because we were worried that the radical Biden administration was not going to pursue justice, even though you had a case of an assassination attempt, a terrorist attack in our state on a Florida resident, on a former president and a popular presidential candidate. We feared that they were not going to pursue justice. And indeed, once we started that investigation, they stonewalled us. They wouldn't give us access to the crime scene. They wouldn't give us access to case files. They would not cooperate with us in any way. So this investigation stalled because of Biden and the Dems for over 220 days. Well, after AG Bondi and FBI Director Kash Patel got in there, everything changed. We started working together right away, and we were excited to finally get the evidentiary a basis to formally press charges last week.
James, I'm not going to ask you to make wild accusations, of course. I know you can't do that and wouldn't do that anyway. I would do that, but I'm not going to do that right now. So perhaps you could give me an innocent explanation why any president, Democrat, Republican, anybody, why would you stonewall Florida's attorney general from investigating somebody who was about to assassinate a politician in this country? That's just doesn't seem to be a left or right thing. That seems to be a very basic thing, unless, of course, you wanted him to succeed. What's the innocent explanation?
I don't know that there's a good explanation. I think they made some allegations that they were worried about us messing up the investigation. But, you know, as far as I can see, you know, you had a couple hundred days go by and they weren't doing anything. Justice should not be partisan. It should not be based on what party is in charge. Justice should be based on putting bad guys away. And I don't care if there's a Democrat or Republican in the White House. If you have a former president, a presidential candidate who someone is trying to kill, the justice systems at the federal and state levels should be working closely together to ensure that justice is levied. And we intend to do that. Again, you know, we pressed charges last week. We'll be bringing this case as swiftly as we can. And we'd like to make sure that we see a conviction in very good due time.
Okay, could you lay out for us the allegations, the charges you're bringing? What did this guy do? What weapons did he have specifically? What is this guy's story? We know we've heard these, you know, internet rumors that the guy was overseas recruiting mercenaries. There's all kinds of wild things out there. What do we actually know?
Yeah, well, you've got really what should be an open shut case here. There's a lot of speculation, a lot, you know, related to the investigation I cannot share today. We do have charging docs and evidence that will be made public very, very soon. But you got a guy here who's been charged with two main counts, attempted murder as well as a state terrorism charge. There's also a separate state felony attempted murder case because he fled the scene, moved across counties into Martin County, and actually collided with a family vehicle. And unfortunately, a young girl in that vehicle was paralyzed as a result of the collision. This is a bad guy, and you know, we've brought several charges, and you know, expect things to move more quickly now.
Okay, let's talk about working with the current FBI versus the old one. You mentioned Kash Patel. What's that been like to have an FBI that actually helps?
It's pretty refreshing. I tell you what, the FBI, you know, hearing those three letters used to kind of give me the shivers because you weren't sure if you were going to get anybody on the other end of the phone that wanted to work with you. It seemed very much like bureaucracy, not a bureau. Today, it's been very different. You've got somebody on the other line that wants to investigate, that wants to move quickly. Obviously is going to follow the law and respect rule of law, but at the end of the day, you know, work to put bad people away.
Let's talk about red state attorney generals and their role in this country on a broader scale, because we won't always have Donald Trump leading the country. We won't have Kash Patel leading the FBI. And we saw what can happen for 4 years under Joe Biden. What role does the AG play? What role should the AG play?
Yeah, you know, AGs are on the front lines to ensure that you've got safe streets, that our families are protected, our children are safe. and that our citizens, you know, have rule of law. AGs are here to make sure we don't have local government officials that, you know, want to be derelict of their duties, that don't want to enforce the law. You know, we've got some prosecutors in this state that from time to time say they're not going to enforce categories of law. We've held them accountable everywhere we can. We've got a great governor who suspends them from office if they do cross the line and violate their constitutional duties. We've got other actions that we can bring as well. In the immigration context, you know, AGs are on the front lines of ensuring we have sovereignty as states, that we have borders, that we are protecting our citizens from the dangers that come when you've got, you know, undocumented individuals that move into the state, often associated with narcotics, fentanyl trafficking, you know, very dangerous components. We're here to step up and ensure that we are going to work with the federal government. We're going to work with ICE to find people that don't belong here and get them out of our state before they cause serious harm.
How do we handle things like prosecutorial discretion, as it's known in your world? You already mentioned the prosecutors. These prosecutors, it's not just a Florida thing, sadly. It's across the United States of America. These prosecutors get into office funded by left-wing money, and they just let criminals out of jail. They don't prosecute people, and it's left a lot of people in this country pretty exasperated with the justice system.
Yeah, look, prosecutorial discretion, it was a big deal to the founders. It's a key tenet of our, you know, our legal enforcement system. Prosecutorial discretion is important to our state attorneys and prosecutors to give them flexibility to negotiate, to plea things down, ultimately to decide where to make priorities. You've got never-ending crimes out there, and we've got to figure out what is truly a priority. But at the end of the day, you've got these leftist radical Soros prosecutors that decide they don't want to enforce the law at all. And they do so in the name of prosecutorial discretion. But that discretion, that does not give you the ability to, you know, delineate policies or broad categories where you say you're not going to enforce certain laws. It doesn't give you the ability to tell your teams, we're not going to bring these cases. We're going to let dangerous people out on bail who may end up, and as we've seen in some jurisdictions, commit heinous crimes, commit murder in the days that follow. That is not permissible. We're not going to allow it in Florida. And I'm glad to see that some other states are following our lead and ensuring that these types of individuals do not get to drop the ball and put the safety of families in, you know, in danger.
I appreciate you very much. Keep going, sir. All right. AI, artificial intelligence. I know it can get way confusing if you're like me. I can barely work my phone. But it's really, really, really important what's happening out there right now and what the goals of the people pushing it. What are those goals? We're going to talk to Joe Allen about that in a moment. Before we talk to Joe about that, you might want to get your chalk in your body before we do. It's your mind working right, you see. Your mind, it needs chalk. Natural herbal supplements. Do you want to feel sharp, rested, ready all the time? Are you tired of being tired? Running out of gas in the afternoon, 2-3 in the afternoon, and you're running to the coffee pot at work. I know. You know, natural herbal supplements will turn that around. I've had people in their 60s, 70s email me and tell me they don't even nap anymore. They don't need to. That's how good chalk makes them feel. You want to feel like that? You want to try that? Get a chalk subscription and see what it can do for you. Chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Artificial intelligence is, I don't get it, but I know it matters. And I have a very 30,000 foot understanding of it, but I know that it matters for business reasons, for national security reasons. It's a really, really, really big deal. Hopefully Joe can explain it in a little bit more detail than that. Are we falling behind? Have we fallen behind? What's the future of all this? Joining me now, Joe Allen, author of the book Dark Eon. Okay, Joe, AI, where are we as a country versus China versus Russia versus the other places out there?
Well, Jesse, despite all of the mythology around it, I think the U.S. is ahead of everyone, including China. China's catching up, but largely due to technology transfer and IP theft. Other nations are also scrambling to catch up. There are a lot of operations in Israel, in Europe. Russia has programs. They're not impressive so far as anyone knows. What we're seeing in this AI race, though, it's definitely a scramble to achieve some sort of human-level intelligence that would almost immediately move beyond into superhuman levels of intelligence. Now, I think there's every reason to be skeptical if that as to whether that is possible, but the drive itself, the fact that we are seeing so much capital, so much effort to rearrange the infrastructure to provide power for these systems, that the people at the top of the food chain, that being all the big tech guys from Mark Zuckerberg to the guys at Google to the guys at Microsoft, OpenAI, XAI, on and on and on, these guys believe that they are creating some sort of godlike entity. And as Elon Musk noted yesterday, he said this many times, that the systems that they believe they're building will be smarter than the smartest human on the planet, and then in short order be smarter than all humans on the planet. It's ultimately a religious belief system, but it's a religious belief system with very, very tangible evidence that their anticipated miracles might actually come into existence.
Okay, so Joe, I hate to ask you to dumb down something you know so much more about than I do, but I understand the concept of being able to gather up all these facts, all these things from you know everywhere, and have a computer smart enough to compute them and come up with answers for things and things like that. But are we at the place where it can gather up all this information and then expand on it? Are we already there, or is that where they're trying to go?
Definitely not there. Definitely trying to go there. You know, it's been said that AI as it exists today, the large language models and image generators, they're kind of like a JPEG file in that they compress a lot of data down into something that's very efficient and streamlined. You also have a lot of problems with the hallucinations still, so that you ask an AI something and it just begins rambling on about non-existent things with a kind of air of authority, providing fake links, all of that. But that's a minority of cases. In the majority of cases, it's somewhat accurate. The dream, and no one knows what the breakthrough will be exactly, but the dream is that you would take all of that compressed data and you would then have, as you just said, a system that would be able to arrive at novel formulas in physics, or be able to put together pieces of information to arrive at a new engineering design, something like that. These systems right now rely on previous human contributions to knowledge, and they just make it easier to access. But it should also be noted that ChatGPT or Grok or any of these systems, that they do produce novel outputs from that knowledge. In that sense, you could say that they are doing something creative. You know, it's kind of like a derivative artist or a derivative writer who just basically weaves together things that other people have said, but does so in a novel way.
Joe, what's NVIDIA and why are they spending $500 billion? That's a lot of cheddar.
Yeah, NVIDIA was really a kind of marginal company until their graphics processing units, the chips that are necessary to train these big AI systems, those chips, when it was discovered that they were very effective at training AI, suddenly the company rocketed in value. Their output and their engineering designs became much more sophisticated due to that. And so NVIDIA, kind of out of nowhere, became one of the largest tech companies in the world. And of course, they plan to open up operations now in Arizona and in Texas to build a chip manufacturing plant and data centers. So they're going to be very, very important. And the reason that Trump and the investors in the U.S. are courting them, trying to bring them into the U.S., is that most, if not the vast majority of chips needed to train AI come from Taiwan. And you see the tension there. For a long time, China has been kind of threatening to move on Taiwan. If they were to do so, that would leave, at least for a while, the U.S. high and dry, and we would have to scramble to come up with the manufacturing infrastructure to build the chips ourselves. It's all part of this AI race. It's kind of an arms race. It's again, it's positioned as if it's the U.S. against China, and it is. But I think that the more important arms race is between U.S. companies like XAI and OpenAI.
Shouldn't we be happy about that arms race between companies? Doesn't that make the product better in the spirit of capitalism and all that?
You know, on its face, sure. But if you look at the statements from Elon Musk, from Sam Altman, from Eric Schmidt, former Google CEO, and even the more skeptical types like Jan LeCun at Meta AI, all of them foresee in the very near future, again, that dream of artificial general intelligence, a machine that can think better than any human being on Earth, and then eventually super intelligence machine that can think better than all human beings on Earth. The goal, openly stated by all of these people and widely ignored, is to create systems that will ultimately replace the economic roles of every human being in the world, except for those in control of the system. They openly talk about replacing first all coders, then all white collar workers, and then all blue collar workers with advanced robotics. And the result for us, the rabble on the ground, is that we're promised that this will lead to radical abundance and we'll all be able to get universal basic income or universal high income, basically meaning we're all relegated to being on welfare with no negotiating power whatsoever. Now, again, this is a dream. We're moving towards something like that. Whether that will happen or not, it's anyone's guess, and many people are guessing and making a lot of money from their guesses. But what I think is really important to remember is that all of these people, the wealthiest men on Earth, are openly saying that they look forward to a greater replacement. They want to see some at first and then all human labor just completely vaporized by automation. Knowing that, pretty much anything else that they might say, you should understand that it is not necessarily you that they're interested in and your benefits and your satisfaction in life. What they're looking for is money. What they're looking for is power. And they're willing to acquire these things at the expense of basically every human being on Earth. Doesn't mean you have to believe that they will actually achieve it. It's just the same as if communists said, we are going to take over your society, equalize all of the roles, and provide the working class with a better life. Doesn't mean they're going to do anything like that. You just know that they are willing to completely restructure everything around their ideology. And you also know historically that it's probably not going to be in your benefit.
Amen. Joe, thank you, my brother. I appreciate it. It's a crazy world. It's too light in the mood. Next. All right, it's time to lighten the mood. And I'm an Ohio State fan. I was born in Ohio, lived there until I was 10. You really didn't have any choice. Ohio State Buckeyes won the national title, showed up at the White House. That's a good thing. What was less good was J.D. Vance, Vice President of the United States of America. He broke the national championship trophy. JD was a good sport about it in the end, though. All right. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.